Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome into the show, everybody. My name is Mark Farzetta. This is the Farzy Show, presented by Steven Singer. Steven Singer Jewelers. Welcome in, everyone, on the Farzy Show YouTube page, as well as Jacob Media YouTube page as well. Hope you guys had just a lovely rest of your Thursday up until the Phillies played the Reds, where it was not good, and Bailey Falter did not have a good game, and the Phillies bats did not have yet again another good game. No, they did not have a good game, and they were 1-for-9 with runners in scoring position, and it was pick your poison. On the post-game show last night, the point I was trying to make, it was everybody was terrible. I mean, Kyle Schwarber hit a home run. That was nice. Nick Castellanos had an RBI single. Okay, fine. But really, nobody stepped up and delivered in the biggest moments when they needed them to deliver. Trey Turner, I know it was a 6-2 ball game, but what the hell were you swinging at to end that ball game? You get on base, then Kyle Schwarber comes up. You have the bases loaded. Yes, two outs, but at least you have somebody that can tie the game with one swing of the bat, and then all of a sudden you're not feeling as bad as the previous 8 innings of that ball game. It was not a good turnout for the Phillies. It was not a good output for the Phillies last night. It was a rough game to watch. And Bailey Falter has been one of the Phillies' most consistent, one of their best pitchers, dating back to the All-Star break last year, and it did not look like it last night. 5 runs scored, 5 runs charged to Bailey Falter in the ball game. Certainly not a good day for him and the lineup. I don't know what you do at this point. I'll tell you what I do like, and I know he only got on base in his last at bat of the game with a bunt single, but Bryson Stott's hitting streak did continue last night thanks to that bunt single, but I still absolutely love the 1-2 punch of Bryson Stott and Trey Turner. I don't mind if I just like those guys as 1 or 2. Stott doesn't have to stay in a leadoff spot. You can move Turner back there. You can move Stott back down to 2, whatever you want to do. But I love those guys up there at the top of the order. What I think you're getting dangerously close to, though, is another shakeup in this order. And you're talking about maybe moving Castellanos up or down a spot in the order, maybe moving him up to 3, maybe down to 5. Maybe Alec Boehm goes up there in the 3 spot. Kyle Schwarber goes to 4. Castellanos goes 5, or maybe 5 at Castellanos, or 4 at Castellanos. There's things that I think Rob Thompson is going to do to shake things up in this lineup if you continue to be unable to hit with runners in scoring position. And here's where you're at. The stat here does not lie. It does not deceive. It tells you exactly what is wrong with the Phillies. Going into last night's ballgame, so this is before they went 1-for-9 in last night's ballgame. Going into the game, the Phillies, ladies and gentlemen, were 4th in Major League Baseball in batting average. .282 team batting average. Yet they have scored the 8th fewest runs in baseball. So you're getting on base. You're getting hits. This is an on base percentage we're talking about here. You can drive in runs with hits here, okay? And they've scored the 8th fewest runs in baseball. That is abysmal. That tells you everything you need to know. That also tells you that you are not capitalizing in any way, shape, or form on opportunities. So it's not just not hitting with runners in scoring position. It's getting runners in scoring position. And then those runners in scoring position get called out of the base paths. because they can't do what is supposed to be the simplest thing in all of baseball, which is just run the bases. The hardest thing is hit the ball. They do that fine. It's as far as running the base pass, oh, terrible, terrible, terrible. Maybe taking a walk nowadays is the easiest thing in baseball because all they do is just put up four fingers and you chop down the line. Yeah, that's easy. The second easiest thing is after that where you just got to run around the bases. Oh, and have your head up. Somebody was asked me on Twitter yesterday, what was the most frustrating thing about the Phillies? And he said to me, I don't know what is the more frustrating thing. The fact that the Phillies' base running is terrible. The fact that they can't hit with runners in scoring position. JT Real Muto. And I think the fourth thing was, because JT Real Muto is struggling. I think the fourth thing was the bullpen. What's the most struggling? What's the thing that really pisses you off the most? What's the thing that really frustrates you? And in all honesty, it's the base running. Because we've seen teams go through slumps of not being able to hit with runners in scoring position. We have certainly seen JT Real Muto as recent as last year go through a long stretch of not being the best catcher in baseball. And we have seen the bullpen be bad. These are all the three things are things that we've seen for long stretches of time as Phillies fans, as baseball fans, you've seen them. But the thing that really gets me is not having your head up while you run the bases. It's not watching your third base coach. And even when you do, or if you do, Dusty Watson has had the late stop sign there at third base like he did against the Yankees. It's been an issue. We've talked about this. We know this. But the thing that just grinds my gears the most is not being able to stay on the base paths. Now, last night, you escaped without getting thrown out on the base paths, which is good. But you did have a little bit of a concern there in that, what was it, the second inning? Pache. I've heard all different pronunciations since he's been with the Phillies. But anyway, he comes up to the plate after Edmundo Sosa leads off the inning with a single. So you think, oh, hey, look at us. Look at us. We're doing things here. This is great. It was one out. Sosa comes to the plate, hits a single, just squeaks by the second, shortstop there, which was nice. Just dribbles into left field. So you got a runner on with one out. Pache then hits a single as well. Sosa is able to take third on this play. Pache ends up rounding first base hard, going for second base. The throw gets cut off just beyond second base, around the shortstop, actually, right? Pache then slams on the brakes and gets caught in a rundown. You're thinking, oh my God, here we go again. We're going to get in another runner thrown out on the base pass. Eddie Sosa is trying to take advantage of this, right? And he's trying to score, at least hint that he could score, tease that he could score. He draws the throw away from Pache, and it goes to third base where Eddie Sosa just barely gets his hand in time, and he doesn't get thrown out. So now you got runners at the corners, and he got one out, miraculously. Look, the fact that it didn't cost them an out or two, it didn't cost them a scoring opportunity, is great. That doesn't mean it's not a mistake still on the base pads. Don't give the other team the opportunity to pick you off. And that's certainly what it looked like in this particular inning. Then after that, with a runner in scoring position, guess what? Nothing happened. Bryson Stott steps to the plate. He strikes out on a 7-pitch at bat. Trey Turner helps you load the bases with a walk, which was nice. Kyle Schwarber kills the threat with a ground ball to the first base. Not how you want to end that inning, unfortunately, especially when you get the bases loaded and you got Kyle Schwarber coming up in the ballgame. That was one instance of just strictly frustrating baseball in that second inning. And you had an opportunity to help out your pitcher in Bailey Falter, who had allowed the run to score in the first inning, which was the game-tying run. So you're just sitting there 1-1. You come back in that second inning, you're thinking, oh, you're going to have all the offense in the world here, baby. Not the case. You'd go on to be 1-for-9 with runners in scoring position. Schwarber comes up in the fifth inning after you, unfortunately, in the bottom of the fourth inning, bottom of the third inning, allowed some runs across the plate there. A lot of struggles in that inning in particular for Bailey Falter. He was able to bounce back in the fourth inning, and then in the fifth to get another run on the Kyle Schwarber home run, made it 4-2, and then that was pretty much all she wrote. McKinley Moore came in, did not have a good outing, almost took the head off of Newman, hit him in the shoulder protected his face and his back of his head, So he gets a runner on. Runner ends up scoring on the Barrero RBI double there in the sixth inning. And it was rough, really, from that point on. A little glimmer of hope there in the idea that you maybe get Kyle Schwarber up again with the bases loaded in that ninth inning. And it just wasn't meant to be. After the game, manager extraordinaire Rob Thompson addressed the media to talk to us about how basically you didn't have guys hitting with the runners in scoring position. That continues to be a problem. He talked about Bailey Falter after the game, what you're going to do from this point on with your starting rotation, the bullpen coming in, most importantly, having struggles in this game, and also the idea of offense eventually coming around. Now, the Phillies, I know the year they started, when they won the World Series in 2008, they were 3-7 to start out the season. They're 4-9 now to start out the season. I know we shouldn't be hitting the panic button. We shouldn't be losing our minds. But, man, Rob Thompson has a good way of just staying chill all the time. Here's Philly Rob after the game on the Philly struggles.
And, we're in a little bit of a kind of a downswell right now, but it'll change.
You don't sense that there's, like, any pressing going on yet?
I don't think so, no. I think they're playing hard. And, like I said, there's great energy in the ninth inning and felt like we were going to come back, and Marshy puts a good at bat on him. Cave put a good at bat on him. Took a called third strike. Stoudt gets a bunt base hit. We're one guy away from getting Schwarber to the plate with tying runs. So, I thought Bailey did a nice job. He, a little bit of struggle in the third inning, but he fought his way out of it. I think McKinley, after he hit the guy, kind of lost the play a little bit, and that's his young guy, second time out there. But I thought Vasquez was outstanding, 22 pitches in two innings, so helped the bullpen out.
Falter was a couple of two-strike pitches.
To cut that off there, that was great, and courtesy of NBC Sports Philadelphia. Falter was not great. Falter was not good. He's been great, was not good yesterday. Not great, at all great yesterday, not at all. Five runs, eight hits, struck out four, issued one walk, 4 2/3 innings of work. Vasquez was great. Actually, he did make a good point there. Two innings one walk baseball, did not surrender a hit, and it was just 22 pitches there. So that was a good thing to get out of the Phillies bullpen yesterday. He came on in relief of McKinley Moore in that seventh, eighth inning. So that was good to see for him. Everything else, as far as not pressing. We could all, as fans, media, we can look at this and say that no baseball team should panic when you're in your third week of the season. You shouldn't panic when you're 14 games, 13 games into the season of 162. I don't know where other fans are at. I get the feeling that some people are just thinking to themselves, it really doesn't count till Bryce is back anyway. If that's your attitude, God bless you. But these are definitely concerns. Not being able to get timely hits, that's a concern. Not being able to get the instant offense regularly is a concern. And look, Kyle Schwarber is doing exactly what he was doing last year. This guy's on pace for another 40 home run season. He went into last night's game on pace for a 41 home run season. He's going to do it again this year. But the thing that's really odd to me about Kyle Schwarber is the 192 batting average. Is that where he's at right now? 196 batting average for Kyle Schwarber. Excuse me. Well, what was it? The shift was supposed to help him, right? Not having the shift. All the rules that have changed in baseball, I like a lot. And I was going to like the idea of no longer having the shift, especially because you have Kyle Schwarber. That hasn't made one damn difference. Still a 200 or below batting average for Kyle Schwarber, and the power is still there. Great. Can I get to 250? Can I get to 240? Can I get 240? Kyle Schwarber without the shift. I mean, shift doesn't do much when you're striking out. And that's one thing that did happen a lot last year that people tend not to acknowledge is that Kyle Schwarber set a career high in strikeouts last year with over 200, I believe, on the dot strikeouts. No bueno. No bueno. Little contact. Like a little contact. Especially when there's no shift. Phillies are back at it 6:40 today. against the Cincinnati Reds team. Taijuan Walker gets the start for the Phillies. Looking to bounce back from what was just a god-awful performance, last time out against this same Cincinnati Reds team. In that game, I believe he walked. How many did he walk? Did he walk six? Did he walk five? There's a lot of walks. I think that's the point. From Taijuan Walker. So hopefully that that sets itself up for success. Coming up in a little bit, we're going to talk to Michael Caskey-Blomain of CBSSports.com, one of my favorite basketball people to talk to, about the Sixers starting up their playoff series at 1 o'clock tomorrow with the Brooklyn Nets. A little bit of a programming note. We may do a second Farzi show today. I might go live again later today. I haven't even told PJ yet, but I know PJ is a hustler. But at 3:45 today, I'm supposed to catch up with Kate Scott. I found this out yesterday. And Kate Scott, ahead of the Sixers game at 1 o'clock tomorrow, was going to come on the show. I was planning on taping the interview anyway and airing it later and using it later in the day. But I just might go live at 3:45 today. A special presentation of the Farzi Show, maybe a little bit later on today. So I look forward to that. But yeah, we'll preview all that with the Sixers taking on the Nets game one of their first round playoff series on Saturday at 1 o'clock. We'll get into that, of course, a little bit more with Michael Caskey-Blomain. There's a couple of other stories that I found very interesting. And the story that I find most interesting is Josh Harris buying the Washington Commanders. I have seen some outrage over Josh Harris buying yet another rival of a team in Philadelphia. He bought the New Jersey Devils, as we all know. He owns that soccer club. He's looking to add more teams in his wheelhouse. And now he has got the ultimate prize for a sports owner. He has got an NFL football team, the Washington Commanders. A preliminary deal has been agreed upon, so I don't believe there's a signed dotted lines just yet. But Josh Harris looks like he is going to be the next owner of the Washington Commanders. Couple of thoughts on this. One, damn it! And it's got nothing to do with Josh Harris, who owns the Sixers, now owning another division rival, this time in the NFL, in the Washington Commanders. It's got nothing to do with him actually buying that team. It's got more to do with the fact that Dan Snyder, the guy who turned that team into a complete dumpster fire, a team that had three Super Bowls, they still have three Super Bowl championships after his ownership. They've only won two playoff games. They've had 27 different quarterbacks in his time owning the team. He's no longer going to own that team. So now, if you're a Washington Commanders fan, there's actually hope that you might not be the dumpster fire that you have been in the NFL for the, 20-some years, 24 years that he's owned the squad? Damn it! Anyway, so that's number one. I'm going to miss Daniel Snyder as the owner of the Washington Commanders because of how terrible they were in his time owning the team. Number two. Josh Harris is a businessman. When he bought the Devils, I went, oh, he doesn't care about our happiness. I get it. That might sound immature, but like, you want an owner. You want an owner to at least sell you on the idea that they give a damn about how you feel. And when you buy another team that the city roots against, a team that has definitely marked my childhood with so many losses to Marty Brodeur and the New Jersey Devils. When you buy that other team, you're now invested in my disappointment. So I don't like that. Now, it's hockey. I know there's diehard Flyers fans still in this city. God bless you. They wrapped up their season with a win. Travis Konecny was great last night. Ivan Provorov got the win, whatever. But if you're going to buy another team, you should make it a hockey team because you're not going to get nearly as much venom as if you bought the Dallas Cowboys, for instance, just as a dumb example, okay? But when he bought the Devils, I went, oh, okay, so he doesn't really care about our happiness. Single tier, whatever. But you know what? As an owner, I was like, you know what? This guy was looking to do something outside the box here in Philadelphia. He was willing to approve Sam Hinkie saying, you know what? We're going to lose. We're going to do a lot of losing. We're going to build assets. We're going to acquire assets. We're going to stockpile assets. And we're not going to be good now. You're not going to get a huge return on this investment now. But you know what? We're going to get somebody that's going to make this team great. That person turned out to be Joel Embiid. And we're going to make this team relevant. All right? We're going to We're going to win championships. We're going to be terrible to. We're going to be terrible for this amount of time so we can be great for this amount of time. And I thought that was bold, and I supported it. I supported the process. I said, you know what? I'm going to give us 3 years. I'm going to give us 3 years to see how this guy can build a team, give us 3 years to be terrible, acquire these assets, and then hopefully when they cash in these chips, they'll be great. And then this is what I didn't like about Josh Harris. He allowed Adam Silver to come in, push him around, push the Colangelos on the 76ers, and then we all know how that ended. And that started the spiral of so many different GMs in such a short amount of time. And that all happened under Josh Harris's ownership. So as an owner, he has not been great. I thought he might be great. He was not great. The thing that you have to keep reminding yourself about Josh Harris is the first statement I made about him. He's a businessman. Congratulations on getting the cash cow, the license to print money that is an NFL football team. Dan Snyder, as terrible as he was, bought the team for, what, $700 million and is selling it for $6 billion? Wow. That's a nice investment. Josh Harris is a businessman. The thing that really sticks in my craw about his time here in Philadelphia, and this is all you need to know. Not only, it's got nothing to do with him buying the Devils, but when crap hit the fan with the pandemic, he was the first guy to jump out there, him and his ownership group, him and his committee, to say, pay cuts. We're all taking pay cuts. And I remember being on the radio at that time, jumping down the Sixers' throat, saying this guy is worth $4.8 billion, and he's talking about pay cuts already to stadium workers. And the rest of the league watched that. The rest of the league watched how Philadelphia reacted to that. And they took away they said, nope, okay, we're going full salaries here. We're going to be paying everybody here. And I give them a lot of credit for doing that, for at least acknowledging the mistake. Because some people would have said, well, the hell with it. I'm a businessman, and that's that. But you still knew where his head was at. And it's a much more serious degree than buying the Commanders or certainly buying the New Jersey Devils. Josh Harris buying the Washington Commanders should be no surprise to anyone. Like, we knew he wasn't invested in our happiness as sports fans when he bought the Devils. We knew that when he decided to abandon ship with Sam Hinkie 3 years into the process and say, oh, yeah, come on, Colangelo's, come on down, Adam Silver, whatever you want to do. So buying the Commanders, I'm seeing people be outraged at this. Why? It's hard to be outraged about something that's not at all a surprise to you. He did what? He made the greatest investment you could probably make in sports. The sports owner bought another team. Oh, this one in the NFL? Okay. Not a surprise at all. And bottom line is, the biggest story in all of this, what really matters in all of this, is that I don't think someone could be worse than Dan Snyder. So that ultimately means that is a huge vote of confidence for Josh Harris and his ownership group buying the Washington Commanders for $6 billion. Holy Lord. That is something else. So I just urge you, don't be surprised. Don't be outraged. Just be disappointed that the Commanders will no longer be that stinky dumpster fire that they have been for the vast majority of my life and a lot of your lives as well. Moving on, speaking of the NFL, how about this? As it's been so terrible in the NFL with other teams, it's been so terrible, particularly with the Washington Commanders. You know where it hasn't been terrible? Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And how about this? Greg Rosenthal, Around the NFL podcast co-host, went ahead and ranked the general managers in football. Huh. I wonder where Howie Roseman landed. Number one, Howie Roseman, the number one GM in football. Listen to this. No team has done a better job using every avenue for player acquisition, balancing current needs with the future. Jalen Hurts' pick in 2020 was a great example of forward thinking that changed the course of the franchise. Whoa. Top three picks in this year's draft class, Jordan Davis, Cam Jurgens, N'Kobe Dean. Mostly had what amounted to redshirt rookie seasons, but players selected in the class before Devontae Smith, Landon Dickerson, helped the team nearly win a title in 2022. Eagles are a great self-scouting team, and they spend a premium on offensive line play and defensive line play. Lane Johnson, Jordan Mailata, Josh Sweat, while finding ways to keep their productive long-term veterans like Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham. Most importantly, Roseman has nailed bringing in players just about to hit their prime, such as A.J. Brown, Hassan Reddick, who I think was already having a prime, and Javon Hargrave. Certainly fair to say that. They recognize the value, and obviously Hargrave now with San Francisco, but they recognize value, whether that means scooping in with James Bradbury like they did last offseason or finding a way to keep him and Darius Slade together. Hurts' looming big contract will test Roseman's flexibility. That's not going to be a test, by the way. But this is the front office that finds answers. Howie Roseman, the number one general manager in all of football. All that's really nice, according to our man Greg Rosenthal here. All that's great. All those things that he said were really nice. But he left out the most beautiful part of Howie Roseman's resume. Returning to a Super Bowl with a different head coach and a different quarterback 5 years after winning a Super Bowl. So not only are you back in the Super Bowl, you're doing with a different head coach, different coaching staff altogether, really, except for our offensive line coach. But it is absolutely amazing. Stoutland University is there, but mostly everything else is different. Different head coach, different quarterback, you're back in the Super Bowl. That didn't make its resume there for Greg Rosenthal, but still, just to add to it, all the great things that he did say. Howie Roseman, the best GM in football. In case you're wondering, Jerry Jones was number 10. Bill Belichick was number 11. Belichick didn't even make the top 10. Honorable mentions, like two. I think it was two new to Judge were like Washington and the Giants, New York Giants. They were down there, pretty far down there, and two new to really assess. What a world we live in. What an about face. We talk about players having a turnaround, and it doesn't happen all that often, but. When you talk about players having a turnaround, like you got to go back to like Bernie Perron, who wasn't that good when he was originally with the Flyers, got traded away, came back, and that was incredible. Like, I'm trying to think of other guys that have gone away, and I was trying to think about this yesterday, other guys that had this amazing turnaround in their career. Like Jalen Hurts, we could talk about that big leap forward that he had, but he wasn't terrible last year. Howie Roseman, pre-Chip Kelly, awful. No bueno, dream team, all that. No, thank you. And then literally pushed aside to give all power and control to Chip Kelly. Go to the janitor's closet, as the old joke goes. And then the Chip Kelly thing happened. We all. And then Howie Roseman was brought back 7 years after that. Two Super Bowl appearances, two different coaches, two different quarterbacks. And when you talk about those teams, you could talk about a starting 22 in this most recent Super Bowl that might be the best starting 22 of the Philadelphia Eagles ever. And then you talk about the 2017 team that might be the deepest team ever. I mean, you can compare that with the Packers winning in 2010 when they had, I think, 18 different guys on IR throughout the season. That's pretty terrible. So you talk about depth. Howie Roseman acquired all that in 2017. You talk about starting 22. He certainly had that in this past Super Bowl, this past run. So thinking about that, possibly the greatest turnaround in Philadelphia sports history, front office executive or player, one hell of a turnaround.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Pretty incredible thing about that. Now he's getting all those accolades. Now he's getting all that praise from the powers that be around the NFL. Let me tell you right now about the great people of Stephen Singer and Stephen Singer Jewelers. The other corner of 8th and Walnut. Right there on Jewelers Row for over 40 years, Steven Singer has been in the love business in Philadelphia, helping people get engaged and fall in love with beautiful, dazzling, diamond, high-quality jewelry at Steven Singer Jewelers. You'll get treated like a real jewelry expert at Steven Singer Jewelers, and you know what else you'll get? The perfect price. What's the perfect price? The perfect price is there to make you feel comfortable each and every day at I Hate Steven Singer. So there's no promo code. There's no sale. The sale is every day at Steven Singer Jewelers. One place, one price, perfect price online at IHateStevenSinger.com. That's IHateStevenSinger.com. Let me tell you about the great people at Manscaped. Manscaped.com, ladies and gentlemen. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at Manscaped.com. That's what you'll get. You'll get the Platinum Package 4.0. It's incredible. It's their best hygiene bundle yet. It includes their lawnmower 4.0 trimmer and their weed whacker ear and nose hair trimmer. And they both come with skin safe technology that helps you reduce the risk of nicks so you can manscape with confidence and comfort. So check out manscaped.com. Use promo code Farzy for 20% off and free shipping. How about Freestone Farm CBD at freestonefarmcbd.com? You'll love their tropical tasting Bayox that clocks in at a chart topping 24.1%. And Super CBD, which is half Hindu, Kush. And 21%. Genetics of these guys are off the charts. So try Freestone Farm CBD at freestonefarmcbd.com. They grow all their premium hemp flower in the Garden State. So how about that? Freestone Farm CBD at freestonefarmcbd.com. How about PHL Sports Nation, Philadelphia Sports Nation, enhancing your Philadelphia sports fan experience across all social media and blogs? That's phlsportsnation.com. We're going to flip things around today. We're going to end with the guest. We're going to get to the chat check right now. Your boy's doing a hit over at Fox 29 at 7:45. So bonus me today, ladies and gentlemen. Let's see what we got going on here in the chat check. Good morning, Sean. What's going on, Sean? How are you, Sean? Good morning, Sean. Good morning, April. Good morning, everybody. Sean Gillespie, what's going on? How do you start to panic? How do you not start to panic? Just start panicking a little bit. I'm panicking. I'm not panicking. Don't panic, Sean. Mike Fuji, finally Friday has come. Yes, I enjoy Friday. Good morning to you. 13 days till the draft. April baseball. Let's all relax. That's true. Sean Kilrain, what's going on? Mike Fuji, hello again. Sean Kilrain. Harris is in the Harris is in the words of Jay-Z, businessman. Doesn't bother me. He's making that bread. Sean Kilrain, good point. Ed Snyder almost bought the Minnesota Vikings at one time. Really? I didn't know that. I'll check that out, Fuji. I don't say you're lying. I'm just saying I don't know that. Let Harris sell the Sixers. and Pat Croce buy the team again. Throw the Flyers in with the Sixers, too. The Flyers aren't selling. They just made that shakeup. They're not selling, at least for a little bit. Sean Gillespie, $6 billion for the Commanders, or the Commodores. Sorry. Harris better build a new stadium. FedEx toilet. It is a toilet. It literally smells like poop. How the bleep is Jerry Jones 10? April? I don't know. And good morning to you. He better be that number one GM with these picks 10 and 30. This year, instant starters, no project. Sean Kilrain, I hope that's the case. Definitely didn't want Jeff Bezos buying the Commanders. Hopefully Snyder will decide not to sell. Maybe, Sean. Gillespie. Jerry Jones on that list will only reinforce his ego, which is a good thing for Eagles fans. That's true. Talking about another guy I don't want to sell his team. I didn't want Dan Snyder selling the Commanders. I don't want Jerry Jones selling the Cowboys. That'd be great for the Eagles. Sean Kilrain, hello again. Hi, John. Good morning, Sean Gillespie again. Hello, John, again. Love you, too. Mihai Sanchez, what's up, Mihai? Morning, Mark, and everyone. Thank goodness the Sixers start against the Nets tomorrow. Phillies stink. Flyers need to sell now. On a serious note, the week we remembered Ed Snyder and Harry Callis. Very, very true. Thank you. Thank you, Mihai. At least Steve Cohen didn't buy the Commanders. You're right. And Sean Gillespie's over there in the Jacob Media YouTube channel. Appreciate you guys. You guys are great, as per usual. Before we get to Michael Caskey Blowmane, I just want to take a listen real quick to one more time to Rob Thompson and what he said last night.
And, you know, we're in a little bit of a kind of a downswell right now, but it'll change.
you don't sense that there's like any pressing going on yet?
I don't think so. No, I think they're playing hard, and you know, like I said, there's great energy in the ninth inning, and felt like we were going to come back. And Marshy puts a good at bat on him. Cave put a good at bat on him. Took a called third strike. Stoddard gets a bunt base hit. We're one guy away from getting Schwarber to the plate with tying runs. So, you know, I thought Bailey did a nice job. He, you know, a little bit of struggle in the third inning, but he fought his way out of it. You know, I think McKinley, after he hit the guy, kind of lost the play a little bit. And that's, he's a young guy, second time out there. But I thought Vasquez was outstanding, 22 pitches in two innings. So help the bullpen out.
Falter.
So basically, when you get back to the main point of all that, which was the question, is anybody pressing at this time with the Philadelphia Phillies in that batting order? And a 282 batting average certainly tell you that, no, nobody's pressing. But only being able to score the eighth fewest runs in all of baseball tells you that when it matters most, these guys are not coming up big. And that's where I think it's totally legitimate to ask the question. Fuji's point there about April baseball, it's a matter of whether or not these guys are feeling that pressure of turning it around. And it's not a matter of turning it around to make the playoffs right now. It's a matter of simply doing what you think you can do, which is driving those runs. When you get the guys on base, actually making them cross home plate is the ultimate goal. And now it might be in their head that they just can't do that. So that's where you start gripping the bat a little too tight. That's where you start playing a little too tight. That's where you start pressing. And that might lead to the other things. That might lead to the idea of feeling like now or never, and that pressure getting in the head of a lot of the Phillies hitters at this point in the season. So hopefully they turn that around. Before we get to Michael KB, I do want to hit this. I am very confident in a sweep of the Brooklyn Nets. I know when you go into things, you should be saying, oh, they could win one game. We're going to steal that one game. They better not steal that one game. You beat this Brooklyn Nets team in every matchup this season. It's a different Brooklyn Nets team. Mikal Bridges is playing well. You know, Seth Curry's going to have shots that are going to drive you crazy. Patty Mills is going to drive you crazy. All these guys are going to stick in your craw from time to time. I understand there might be a game here that is a close game down to the wire. I understand there's going to be a game here where you do have those guys like Spencer Dinwiddie going off and Seth Curry going off, and you're going to be banging your head against the wall saying, where's the perimeter defense? I am still looking for up until the second round of play. We have gone through the last year of our lives hoping that the Sixers at the very least make it out of the second round of the playoffs. I am still in that mode of getting out of the second round of the playoffs. So, with that being said, it is not the second round of the playoffs, so I want more confidence that they can get out of the second round of the playoffs. And you know how you're going to help me do that? By sweeping the hell out of the Brooklyn Nets and rolling through them and getting right back to taking a break. That's how. Get out of the series healthy. Get out of the series in four games. Joel Embiid, go ahead and eat, big fella. James Harden, don't do the disappearing thing that you always get crushed for in the playoffs. Let me see a ball, son. Let me see a ball. Let's hope that all that comes to fruition. Maxey, of course, does what he could do. Tobias Harris does this year what he did last year in the playoffs, which is hit you some threes, play some great defense. Let's hope that that's the case in this particular series. And P.J. Tucker, man, go ahead and bring it. Let me see a little bit more playoff P.J., ladies and gentlemen, as this series starts up tomorrow. Look forward to seeing how it all comes together in this particular series. And Doc Rivers, I do very much feel, is coaching for his job in this playoff run. Because the stories that have come out regarding James Harden, two in particular, about how he already has one foot out the door, about how the end of this season he's really going to be looking to cash in. Well, if this playoff run is a moneymaker for James Harden, that's a good thing for the Sixers. At least right now it is. Because if he is extra motivated by signing that one last huge contract in his career, he can help pad those numbers, those financial numbers in that contract by having a nice, long, sustained playoff run here in Philadelphia. That goes well for you, goes well for me, goes well for the Sixers, of course, as well. But if it does not go well, and James Harden is going to be very much so looking elsewhere, like Houston has been the team being thrown out there the most, Well, then what happens first off after that, when it's no longer the James Harden, Joel Embiid era of the 76ers, Joel Embiid, James Harden, give proper billing there. What happens after that? Who comes in? What's the next? Are you just waiting for Tyrese Maxey to step up into that superstar role? All right, that's nice. Still like to have a little bit more reassurance. Somebody else coming in is an absolute proven commodity. But the other thing that comes in here is if the Sixers do get bounced out in the second round again, and let's just say James Harden still wants to stick around here, I don't think he's sticking around with Doc Rivers as the head coach. Now, regardless of what James Harden does, if they get bounced out of the second round, I don't see how you could bring Doc Rivers back as the head coach of this basketball team. So I think Doc Rivers is very much coaching for his job here. And you could be on another thing where I think he still has, 2 years left in his deal? Whew, that's rough. But there are players, there are coaches that are playing for their jobs. There's coaches coaching for their jobs. I think that's Doc Rivers. And I also think it's James Harden playing for the idea of staying here in Philadelphia or not. I think he wants to stay overall. But if this team can't get out of the second round again, why would he? Why would he stay around? Michael Caskey, Below Main of CBSSports.com, breaks it all down with me. He joins me right here on the Rothman or the Peace guest line. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend. It just happened, folks. I didn't think I'd see it, but it's like seeing Bigfoot. The man, Michael Caskey, Below Main, who joins us right now from CBSSports.com, literally puts it in there. NBA writer, CBS Sports, I stay hydrated. The man literally just took a drink from a bottle of water, didn't you? Didn't you there, Michael?
I'm always drinking water. That's a true statement in that bio right there. It's been there since I think I started Twitter in 2011. I've always been staying hydrated. And if I'm coming on to talk to you, man, I got to make sure I'm good to go. I can't be feeling dry.
Yeah, you know what? You got to make it a point to drink plenty of water. And I'm not just saying that because, like you said, the weather's getting hotter and all that jazz, my friend. It just, you feel so much better when you're fully hydrated. It really is really amazing.
No downside except added trips to the bathroom, but.
You really got to. Gotcha. Michael, I have to start off with the subject here of Joel Embiid and the whole MVP thing. I can't believe I'm saying this because I thought something was going to happen where he'd get snubbed. And other than Giannis working his way more into the conversation, at least, of MVP, it certainly looks like Joel Embiid is about to win the MVP award. What are you hearing in that circle of NBA writers talking about Joel Embiid as the possible 2022-2023 NBA MVP?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Mike. And it's pretty crazy if you think about the second-to-last straw poll that ESPN conducted. It had Jokic extremely far ahead of Embiid, and it looked like he was well on his way to coasting to a third straight MVP award and that Joel was going to come in second. But, you know, the way he has played since the All-Star break, just absolute dominance, putting his foot on the gas, both ends of the floor. I think he really kind of was able to separate himself there. And Jokic, not that he played poorly down the stretch by any means, but he missed some games. He had, you know, the Nuggets hit a couple stretches there where they were struggling a little bit. And I think the narrative really shifted toward Embiid with how well he and Harden and how well the Sixers have been playing. They had the best record in the league since Harden came back from that injury issue that he had earlier in the season. And like you said, I think the fact that, you know, Embiid really gets it done on both ends of the floor, and he's made some, you know, really fantastic defensive plays down the stretch of the season that kind of stick out in voters' minds. I think that's played a big part. And so far, all the votes that have been cast, there's a Twitter account. I forget the exact handle, so I don't want to mess it up, but there's an account out there that keeps basically like a live tally of all the MVP votes that have been submitted, you know, publicly available so far. And I know last time I checked earlier this morning, Joel was, you know, rolling pretty much. So, you know, barring a late comeback or a late change, it certainly looks like the Sixers will have their first MVP since AI in 2001.
That's absolutely incredible. I know he was recently quoted when talking to Rachel Nichols that's the best thing a player could do individually. So how about the best thing a team can do as a team, which is win an NBA championship? We'll get to that point, I'm sure, as far as that topic of conversation. But just, I know the Nets are sitting there right in front of them. What are the Sixers' odds of rolling through the Nets and then hopefully just making it past the second round of the playoffs? What do you make of that?
Yeah, Mark, I mean, I think we can assuredly say that heads will roll if they're not able to get past this first-round series of the Nets. This isn't the Nets of 6 months ago from your father's time when they had Kevin Durant and they had Kyrie Irving, and there was still hope of Ben Simmons turning back the clock a couple years. Now, you know, this is a Nets team that has a different coach than they started the season with. They had two superstars. Now they have none. That's not to say this is a team the Sixers can overlook by any means. There's a lot of talent. Mikal Bridges, who obviously Sixers and Philadelphia fans are familiar with, has taken a huge step forward and really blossomed, kind of stepping into the top guy role on the offensive end for Brooklyn. He was always great in Phoenix, but he was more of a, obviously, like a 3-and-D role player type guy that was third, fourth option on offense. Well, in Brooklyn, he's really been the go-to guy, and he's, you know, shown that he's capable of shouldering that role. But, I kind of think that's where the feel-good story ends. They were able to even make the playoffs after those trades, which I think a lot of people thought they would kind of, you know, fall down the Eastern Conference standings, but they were able to, you know, at least keep their keep where they were and make this playoff, which I think is, you know, a credit to them and their coaching staff. And their future is still somewhat bright given the assets that they got back in those trades and the young players they have. But, you know, at a talent level, they just can't match up, with the top tier talent the Sixers have. They have no one on that roster that can match up to Joel, obviously, at all. It's going to should create all sorts of, you know, mismatches and tough things for their defense, trying to double and triple team him and get the ball out of his hands. So, you know, I always am down to give a team one game in a series that they could get hot. Mikal could go off for 40. So I'm not going to say it's a sweep, but I think the Sixers should be able to take care of business in that first round and, you know, five games max. And then, like you said, it will be a second down showdown with Boston.
How annoyed am I going to be with Seth Curry by the time this all is said and done? Is he going to have one game as well that's going to go off and make us just as frustrated as all hell?
Probably. There's definitely going to be one game. And Dinwiddie, you know, they have these guys that are been known to give the Sixers a hard time. So that's why I think there will be one game. It could be the Seth Curry game. It could be a combination game. But there'll be one where these guys are going off and, you know, people will be shaking their head. But overall, I think Joel is going to lead the charge here and get them into that matchup with Boston.
I certainly agree with that. Now, as far as the second round, you do see it being obviously Boston here. We know Joel Embiid has to play his MVP level. We know James Harden has to be the NBA leader in assists and knock down threes and play that role, of course, here and be the number two guy behind Joel Embiid. But how much does a guy like Tyrese Maxey have to step up? Tobias Harris, playoff PJ Tucker? I cross my fingers for that. And then hopefully some guys coming off the bench to help. What do they need to do to finally make it past that second round?
Yeah, I think you said it, Mark. And I think this year, on paper at least, they're more well-poised to potentially do it. They're a little bit deeper. They have a little bit more versatility. And the guys they're bringing in off the bench are kind of two-way players as opposed to, I think, years in the past, they kind of had some guys that were pigeonholed into, like, shooting roles or small things, where now you bring in some guys. You know, you're talking about a second unit that D'Anthony Melton, Paul Reed, McDaniels. These are guys that can play both ends of the floor. They're scrappy. They're younger and more athletic than the Sixers bench has had in the past, which I think will be huge. But, you know, in that series against Boston, it comes down to two guys to me, and you mentioned them both. Obviously, Joel, who has had, you know, his fair share of struggles with Boston in the past in the playoffs. They've kind of been like this, you know, mountain that the Sixers have had to climb to get to the promised land of getting to the finals, and they haven't been able to do it in, you know, Joel's era so far. I think he's better, obviously, than the past times that they played the Celtics in the postseason, but it's going to be, you know, him and James Harden. Obviously, I think Harden was great throughout the regular season. He did played as well as you could have hoped. He altered his game, led the league in assists, like you said. But until he shakes it, he's going to have this kind of lingering reputation of shrinking in the moment in the postseason, underwhelming performances. Even as most recently as last year, those games when Joel was out against Miami, I think people expected a little bit more out of James and he was able to deliver at that time. And, you know, maybe he was hampered. He was dealing with a hamstring injury, but this year he was back looking like not necessarily prime James Harden, but a really good dominant offensive player. And there just can't be a slip in production. If anything, you need to see, you know, his aggressiveness level go up in the playoffs and looking to attack more, looking to break down defenses more. If he's able to do that and Joel is able to continue to play, you know, he doesn't even have to be unbelievable, just the level that he's played at throughout the season against the Celtics and against everybody else. I think, you know, the Sixers will have a shot. At least it's going to be a battle, but they have a shot, I think.
As we continue to look past the Nets, I mean, is there a major selling point to the idea of the Sixers being able to beat the Celtics in that seven-game series? Is there anything that they have done this season to let you think, oh, yeah, when push comes to shove, they force a game six, game seven, they can pull out a victory in the series over the Boston Celtics?
Yeah, I think so, Mark. I think that last game that we just saw that Joel went and dropped 52 against Boston, granted, there were a couple of key guys, Jaylen Brown, a huge part of their team. But I think that was a game that the Sixers really used to kind of end the season with an exclamation point and show, like, hey, we can contend with anyone. The attitude to be the top teams this season when they needed to at different times throughout the year. And I think they have the confidence bringing a guy in like PJ Tucker. Obviously, Joel's experience that he's gained over the years helps. So, you know, it's going to be played out on the hardwood, I think. But in the locker room, I think they believe that they can do it. And I think, if anything, just Joel's level of play, it's, you know, we've been saying it for each of the past 3 years. It seems like he keeps raising the bar a little bit. And this year is the best he's ever played. And I just think that, you know, sometimes when you have a player playing at the peak of their powers like Joel is, you know, sometimes they just have a year or a moment. And maybe this will be the year where Joel gets that run to really solidify himself as an all-timer. And, you know, if he's playing that well, there's no one on Boston or anywhere else, frankly, that could stop him. So yeah, I think that's what the Sixers have to bank on and hope for.
One last thing I want to say about Embiid, and I've never experienced this with Joel Embiid, and he's played great and he's been great and all that stuff. He's been worthy of an MVP, certainly in the conversation. But the one thing that stuck out to me this year versus any other year of Joel Embiid, I've never seen him get stronger as the year went on. And that seemed to take place this year. I can't throw numbers at you to confirm what the eye test gave me for the second half of the season, but it looked like he was a guy very much willing to carry this team into and through the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's acknowledged that himself, Mark. He said recently over the past couple of weeks at the end of the regular season that it was the best he ever felt in his career at this point in the season. And, you know, I think it's really just the combination of health and conditioning. At this point in his career, he's in the best condition, the best shape he's ever been in. He was largely able to be healthy throughout this season, whereas, you know, in previous years, there was always nicks and nacks that would pop up that would cost him, you know, a week there, 2 weeks there, which wasn't a huge deal. But every time it would, you know, take his conditioning down a notch that he would then have to work up back to. And this year, it's just been like a smooth, you know, pretty much a smooth ride throughout the season where he's been able to keep that conditioning and play at a high level. And I think because of that, he's going into the playoffs as healthy as possible. So now if he can just avoid any crazy flying elbows or concussions in the first round, hopefully if the Sixers are up 20, Doc will take him out for the last 3 minutes and let him rest and not worry about, you know, getting him hurt. But otherwise, barring any injury like that, he's definitely heading into a series with the Nets and moving forward, you know, the best he's ever been in playoff form for sure.
What was the other thing? What did he dunk the ball too hard in Toronto and hurt his hand? Was that the other injury he had last year?
Yeah, that happened too.
Good God. Yeah, no, the broken face is the lead story. You're absolutely right. But I just remember, like, the weirdest thing. He dunked it too hard.
Two freak accidents that definitely shouldn't have happened, but of course it happened to Joel.
Of course. How would you assess Doc Rivers and the year he's had as the Sixers head coach?
I think he's been good, man. I know that's not a popular opinion. I know people on Twitter have been calling for him. Honestly, to me, I thought he coached really poorly in the Atlanta Hawks series 2 years ago, obviously, when they lost in that second round. And I thought there was a lot of reason for people to be, you know, annoyed and upset with the way he coached. Since then, I feel like a lot of criticism with him has been nitpicking or people kind of just riding an agenda. Thought last year throughout the season he was pretty good. They lost in that series to the Heat. If Joel had been able to play in those first two games, I think it might have been a different story. This year specifically, the Sixers are in the top 10 on both ends of the floor, which, you know, only I think two other teams in the league can say that they're on the top 10 in both. You know, they have a really good offensive system. Joel has obviously blossomed. I think moving him full-time up to the foul line and extended nail area has really opened up the offense for him. And you know, he put together this two-man game between, you know, James and Joel, which is a different offense, obviously, than the Sixers had the previous year, where it was really post-heavy with Joel, and they got a lot of their looks and generated a lot of their offense out of that. So, you know, to me, obviously, at the end of the day, he's going to be judged on postseason performance, not only by the fans, but by the front office. There's a chance he's coaching for his job this postseason, and depending on, you know, like I said, I think obviously if they lose in that first round, you could pretty assuredly say he might not be back. If it gets to a second round series against the Celtics and it's competitive 6-7 games and the Sixers look decent but fall short, you know, there's an argument to be made they could go in a different direction. But, you know, I think also there's an argument to be made that they could keep him. But to me, you know, I'd give him, you know, if we're doing grades, a B so far for the season. There's obviously always room for improvement, but I think overall he finally, you know, given the guys some playing time, he got Paul Reed as the backup center, which is what fans were calling for a long time. And he finally got that opportunity. I think he's done a good job with the lineups, switching, you know, getting guys run so they didn't sit on the bench for too long. Found a nice role for, you know, Maxi, Melton. So, you know, he's made some mistakes, but I think he's been overall solid. But you know, inconclusive, obviously, until after the playoffs and we see how they perform.
Sure. Now, I hope to talk to you again at some point in the playoffs. Hope to talk to you again shortly thereafter. But going into the postseason, what's the expectation for the future of the Embiid-Harden era 76ers?
I think there's some genuine concern, Mark, not at a high level, but I think within the organization, I don't even know if concern's the right word, but I think there is some thought that Harden could leave in the summer, depending on what some of the outside offers are. I know the Sixers have been really happy with, you know, both him on and off the court this year. There's no, you know, friction, at least that I know of, but also they realize his age. They realize the window they have with Joel. If this team, you know, underperforms in the playoffs again, I think both sides will want to stop and consider, you know, is this the best path moving forward to maximize Joel, to maximize James for the remainder of his career? So I think there is a chance that he goes separately, but at the same time, from everything I've heard and everything James said, he's loved playing in Philadelphia. He loves the fans. Obviously, the chemistry he has with Joel speaks for itself. You can see it out on the floor. There's those two have the highest like assist combination in the league by far in terms of one player getting another player an easy basket. James to Joel was the highest. So, you know, I think there's a lot of reason to be optimistic that he could stay in Philadelphia. But, you know, you'd be remiss not to acknowledge the fact there's the Rockets rumors. And, you know, crazy things happen in the offseason. He's kind of proved this year. To me, it was like a prove-it year to James where he signed that what 2-year deal with a player option to basically show like, hey, I know there were some doubts about me and, you know, my injuries and my age, but I can still do this, leading the league in assists, showing that he could, you know, best three-point shooting season that he's had in a while. So there will probably be suitors, and the Sixers will be one of them, but I think there's a limit to, you know, how much they're willing to go. So, you know, I think the playoffs will also obviously play a big role in his future, depending on what he decides to do.
Absolutely. His name is Michael Caskey-Blomaine. He is wildly well-hydrated and wildly well-informed when it comes to the art of the NBA and the 76ers. Make sure you guys are following him on all social media, especially on Twitter at CBSSports.com, reading all his articles and staying abreast of all the situations the NBA playoffs have to offer. Michael, always great catching up with you, man. Thanks so much.
You too, Mark. Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate you.
Absolutely. Michael Caskey-Blomaine joining us on the Rothman Orthopedics guest line.